Welcome your hosts, Caddy Frank and Aaron Fitzgerald, as they lead discussions about substance use disorder and the journey to recovery. You're listening to Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution.
Good morning. Welcome to our show, Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution. My name is Caddy Frank, your host from Minnesota Recovery Connection, along with Miss Aaron Fitzgerald, my co-host.
Hey, Caddy.
Hey,
listeners.
Aaron. How are you, dear?
Good. Nice to be here again.
Yes. Let's say hello to our listening audience. Wave to the camera. Hello, hello, hello. So good to be here. Let's remind the listeners who we are. And we are Minnesota Recovery Connection, and we are a nonprofit organization, and we are here to talk to you about recovery and what recovery has and what it means to the recovery community.
Yeah, right. So looking at the history of Minnesota Recovery Connection, that started from the lens of a peer-to-peer support. So we are here to talk about substance use disorder and the many topics or intersections that might lead a person to substance use disorder, and perhaps even more importantly, how we can be non-judgmental and support a person who is struggling with substance use. You know, the title of this show is really telling, because we are here to redefine recovery because we are in the midst of a recovery revolution. And the more people that understand what changes have been made, more changes that will be made and what could be happening and why the changes, the better chances people who are struggling with substance use disorder have to find recovery, because it's so complex.
So complex. It's so...
I had no idea.
It's so amazing how the depths of the different parts of substance use hit so many different facets. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. So that's why we're here, to redefine recovery, right, Aaron?
Yeah, yeah.
You betcha. Love that Minnesota little bits we got going on there. So we are going to talk about recovery, and we're going to talk about how this substance use disorder and how recovery affected our lives. And we all have different needs within this. We all have different spaces and places that we take up in the recovery community. And just in the last couple of days, I've been really woken up to how substance use disorder has many different facets. I was just telling Aaron when I came in this morning that life really just can throw us for loops because of this disease, as well as how it can have a compounding effect on many of us. So we want to stop siloing people, because we put people in a box in recovery. We see them in one space and we think, okay, just get over that. Just move forward. You can figure this out. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. We got to listen. We got to talk. We got to be part of a recovery community. Mm-hmm. We have to literally, our name, we have to redefine what recovery looks like. It's just so powerful, isn't it, Aaron?
It's totally, 100%.
It's amazing. So talk to me, darling.
Yeah. Well, so our first show, we said that we were going to start with a question that you ask in your Recovery Coach Academy, and that's what's right with you today. And so before you answer that question, will you just reiterate why we ask that question to, especially to people who are in early recovery?
I think it's one of the most important ways that, so I train at Minnesota Recovery Connection peer recovery specialists. And when they come into the class, they're thinking, oh my God, I'm in class. What am I going to do? This is going to be a big week. And they're thinking about all the things that they want to do, where they want to go, what they want, what's going to happen. And I just sort of like center them in. We ask, what's right with you today, now, in this moment? And what that does is it gives people an opportunity to just kind of come in a little bit. If you saw my hands, you'd say it's a coming in to their center, and give them an opportunity. It's like, don't think about anything big, just what's right with you today. Sometimes people say they woke up. Sometimes people say they got their kids off to school. Sometimes people say, I took a long hot shower. And I'm like, oh man, that's really what's right with you today. Mm-hmm. So Aaron, what's right with you today?
What's right with me today is that I woke up and I have to go out of town for a 3-day training, which I'm very excited about. And what's right about that today is that I know that my son is going to be in a safe place while I'm gone. Mm. And that's right today, because I couldn't and can't necessarily always say that. And so I'm very happy for that today. Yeah. How about you, Miss Caddy? What's right with you?
So what's right with me today? I didn't get enough sleep last night, but that's okay because I was really looking forward to being here today.
You got chipper in a quick minute.
So what's right with me is that I get to fulfill a dream of being here where I've wanted to be for a long time. We discussed that last show. And what I'm just grateful that I get to have a voice in my life. I get to have a voice with the community that I support. And I get to be grateful for today, literally today. I'm truly grateful for today because today has brand new possibilities. And I'm just going to live the heck out of them. That's what I'm going to do.
Excellent. You're so cute.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what we do with one another. Okay. So when we were with each other the last time, we were talking about kind of my story and what was happening with me. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going to walk into that space again. But Erin's going to be our story. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's really important for people in the recovery community and those who are listening to us and people who are maybe not in the recovery community to understand what this process of sobriety and recovery looks like. And that's one of the things we sort of talked about last week was there's a difference between being sober and there's a difference in being recovery. And what I want Erin to kind of walk into is where did her life do those transitions and where does that fit now? Now, I'm going to tell just a quick story that I forgot last week that Erin is kind of on the edge of her seat for me to mention. Right, Erin?
Yeah.
Has to do with a certain color.
That was hilarious.
So we're going to tell you a quick story. We'll take a break and then Erin's going to come back and she's going to tell you a little bit about her. But if we remember from our first show, Caddy got thrown in the pokey because she had a second DWI. And we said that she had to change her clothes. Well, she had to put on an orange jumpsuit. Oh, yes, she did. And it was remarkable how that had a long-term effect on my life.
It's one of the first things that I found out about you is that you despise the color orange.
Oh, I hate it. Sorry, hate's a strong word, but it's accurate. To the point there's even a commercial I told Erin about.
Yes. It's, sorry. Like, I will change the channel.
I do. I change the channel. It's some sort of, I don't know, some sort of mobile device or something. Then the primary color is orange. I just to this day cannot tolerate the color. I can't because it left such an impact in my mind.
Right.
And it really impacted how I feel about myself. Mm-hmm. And so for those of you who are out there both in recovery or supporting somebody in recovery, there are times, there are places when somebody just kind of taps out. They can't take a situation. They are unable to like continue a conversation. They see something on TV. I was watching a TV show a while back and I saw a scene and it was like, it hit me to my core. Mm-hmm. And my partner, he was like, okay. And I said, this is what can happen when you're in recovery and you have some recovery time, lots or little. There's spaces that really touch us deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't know when those are going to be activated again, right? They come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and they just surprise the heck out of us.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you've ever I use the word triggered, and we have to mm-hmm. be careful with that term.
Right.
Is there anything that triggered gets you kind of off your stump?
You know, not necessarily anymore to the point where I'm like, even think about substance or anything, because the things that were activating or triggering to me before were humans. They were people.
Mm. Yeah, it took me a long time. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it took me a long time to really figure that out. But I guess for me, if it's too much noise and chaos, I really kind of start to shut down then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's just overwhelming.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Because I think what happens in my mind, because yesterday I was driving home from a long drive, And I was listening to the radio, and there's just so much coming at me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just need silence.
Yes.
Silence.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know me. I like to take a break and remove myself from rooms when I've been just too much talking mm-hmm. and such. I really just need that space. So.
Yeah. No, I've seen on occasion your door close in the office. And
yeah.
I'm like, Erin's taking that moment.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Erin is going to come back and I'm going to come back and we're going to get to know a little bit more about Erin Fitzgerald. How exciting.
This guitar needs 6 strings, 'cause without it there's no song. And this house needs...
I just love that intro. I just love that music. It's just so amazing. It just kind of soothes the soul a little bit. So that was a pick from Erin, and I just am so delighted about that music. So here we are back, and I want to walk into the space of when we start talking about our story and we start coming into like sort of unfolding who we are, it can be complicated. Because one of the things Erin just said was that when you have different parts of our life and different parts of our story, it's like, who do we talk to and how do we talk to them? And I'm going to use the word expose. Who do we expose to? Because it is complicated sometimes. Who's our audience? You are our audience. Mm-hmm. Bless your little hearts out there. So, Erin, I was able to tell the folks a little bit about myself last show, and now I think it's really important for them to get to know you and who is Erin and why is she sitting across the table from me,
man,
on this journey.
yeah, thanks. So yeah, it was really difficult to decide how to tell my story because I don't know who the audience is, and for me it's important to know who I'm talking to because I need to know, or I want to know, what part of my story can they benefit from hearing? Because mm-hmm. not everybody has the same things in their story as me, but we can almost always relate at some point, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to start with how I got here. I guess you and I, you invited me to start training the Peer Recovery Specialist Recovery Coach Academy about 1.5 years ago. And
best thing I ever did.
Oh, that's... silliest thing. And here's why that is. I mean, it's just all so important. 1.5 years ago, I told Caddy no.
Yep, she did. She said, uh-uh.
Yeah, because I don't like people to look at me and listen to me. I don't have good things to say. You know, that's part of my healing. And so you really lifted me up and gave me a platform to grow in that space. I'm grateful for that.
If I can acknowledge real quickly, what you can't see right now is a woman who is a bit emotional, and I want to recognize the fact that this is parts of recovery. We really do wake up people, and we wake up things in people. I'm getting tears in my eyes across the microphone from her.
Thank
so
you.
I'm so glad you're here, Erin.
Thanks.
I'm so glad.
No, I am. I just have so much gratitude for my recovery and the people that have really, really helped lift me up in the last few years. So a year prior to you asking me to help you with that, I took your Recovery Coach Academy and learned all about Peer Recovery Specialist. My mind was blown. In one short week, everything changed. Not even kidding. And the reason why this is important for me, why it's important for me to be here having these conversations, is because at about 6 months into my recovery, my therapist, God bless her, she's the most amazing woman, she told me that I would make a great peer recovery specialist, to which I said, I have no idea what this means. Tell me more. And so she explained it to me, and the way I heard it, it sounded like a paid sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, that's great. And like, I can do that. She's like, yeah, except it's not like AA or anything. It's all paths to recovery. And I just had like a big question mark. Like, what
does that mean?
No idea what that means. Like, I know treatment and AA.
Uh-huh.
People, that's all I've ever been told.
Yep.
Right? And the reason why that's important is because I went to 5 different treatment facilities, mm-hmm. all by choice. 2 were inpatient and 3 were outpatient. I really only needed to go to 1 because I got the same information at all 5 of them.
Huh. Imagine that. Siloed. Yeah. One size fits all. Not so much.
It's so interesting. And besides that, I also was hospitalized, emergency room, stayed in, overnight stays for alcohol-related symptoms, right? Mm. I had pancreatitis and I had withdrawal symptoms multiple times.
Wow.
I was destroying myself, you know? And then there was detoxes, a couple of stays in the good old psych ward. And in all of those spaces, it adds up to 37 facilities. That I crossed paths with so many people that had to have known something more than me or could have known something more than me. And the only thing that I was ever told was quit drinking,
mm-hmm.
go to treatment,
mm-hmm.
go to AA.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't working.
Right.
And so that led me to believe that I was stupid and unable, worthless. Like all of these things that I already had felt about myself my entire life were just reiterated because I couldn't figure out how to not pick up a bottle.
Yeah.
It was so frustrating.
Yeah. It's so incomplete what you experienced
mm-hmm.
because there's a good person inside 99.9% of us, and you're just doubting that human because you are in your addiction, you're in your disease.
Yeah. Precious people. Just have things happen to them and, and then we look at them differently
mm-hmm.
and we have to stop doing that. So, man, I'm probably going to go all over the place because that's how my brain works a little bit. Before I met my therapist, that was, I met her right after, I got out of my last treatment facility, and something was different there.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why I'm here is because I want people to know that there are more services out there than what you've been told or what you think there is. So it's not just treatment. It's not just AA. There's all sorts of options. All you have to do is ask, right?
Absolutely.
And then, so that's one important piece. And then the other important piece, and, I'm looking back at it, and I'm like, man, I should have just, figured it out, but I didn't. I needed somebody to say something or ask the right question. I really did. And in that last treatment facility, I had a counselor come in, and she was actually a fill-in counselor. And if anybody's familiar with history of your substance use, counselors will ask you to start it the first day that you use, what it was, how much it was, mm-hmm. and you walk through your life and you just point out what substance you used, how much it was, what age you were, and you just continue on down the line until today.
Sort of like a chronological diary of your use.
Yep, of my use. Mm-hmm. Easy peasy. And so I had done that, 4 other times.
Right.
I was familiar with it. So I went up to the whiteboard in front of this class and I wrote down 12 years old drunk. And she said, "No, will you please erase that and start from the beginning?" Mm-hmm. And I looked at her
like, "What?
Yeah, were you there? I was 12. Pretty sure. I mean, I think so. Similar to yours. It wasn't an amazing experience, but I went back for more. But she said, "No, start at the beginning. When were you born?"
Oh, wow.
And I was like, huh. So we went through all of the events that could have been, any kind of big, happy, sad, traumatic, all these events up until the age of 12. Because why in the heck would a 12-year-old girl be drinking and
Absolutely.
Getting drunk, right? And so that's when it just dawned on me. And I mentioned this last week. It was like I didn't have an alcohol problem. I had a, what the heck is wrong? And wired up in your brain, Aaron, you gotta unwind that and mm-hmm. figure it out. And, so it's, I spent more time trying to find recovery, literally struggling in a cycle of I'm sober, I'm relapsed, I'm sober, I'm relapsed. For 6 years,
wow.
I did that. It only took me 2 years for my body to become dependent on alcohol the way that I was using.
Mm.
And so that's just powerful. So scary that just... so many people had opportunities. I mean, I'm so grateful for how everything's turned out and where mm-hmm. I am and why I'm here, because now I have this experience that I can share and it can help somebody else.
Right.
Right. And if I hadn't experienced all this BS, I maybe wouldn't be so passionate about mm-hmm. letting people know their options. Right.
Yeah. It really is the journey. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just so incredible that counselor said, no, start at your birth and where do you go from there? Mm-hmm. And I think what's important about that, and then we'll let you continue on, is that if we look at all of the events of our lives, they do add up to many different reactions mm-hmm. and actions we take. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really hard for people who are struggling with their children, their spouses, their partners, their neighbors, their whoever. You can see the action that they take against that stuff. But if you don't know the stuff, you can't put a whole picture together. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to what we talk about when we do the trainings and we talk about in our work, when we talk about peer-to-peer services, is we got to listen. We got to listen. We got to ask a question. So what might have happened to someone that brought them to this stage? Because mm-hmm. that's where a lot of the information can come from. It doesn't necessarily fill in all the blanks, but it really helps kind of build a picture. Because I say sometimes recovery is like a puzzle. And when you are looking at a puzzle, you kind of put together, you might be the person who puts together the frame on the outside because mm-hmm. all those flat edges all make sense, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then you have that interior part and you're like, wow, that's a big hot mess.
More complicated.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about some of those inside pieces.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you kind of just said like, sometimes they're just little things, right? And they all add up. And then if you add a big one, then, you know, then maybe that can put more pressure. And for me, it seems like all the little things, all the negative things that had happened, I allowed to turn into bigger things because I believed that, like, maybe that was an okay thing. Or maybe somebody, it's okay for somebody to treat me this way mm-hmm. because nobody stopped it from happening, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, just the way that I was treated or not treated really played a huge role in how I thought about myself.
Right.
And that was basically worthless, you know. And it wasn't like from a person
right.
or, you know, whatever. It was just all through my life. And it was like I just felt really lost for so many years. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it just always felt like I never fit in. I always fit out.
Yeah.
And trying to fit in was really difficult because, you know, I couldn't make true friends because mm-hmm. that's not where I belonged, mm. right? I mean, it's like incredible. At the ripe young age of 40 is really when I started, like, making real friendships. I do have friendships from the past, from my childhood and stuff, but it's just incredible. Like, the things that I knew, but I second-guessed myself all the time. You know, especially when it came to anything that was like emotional or feelings, because for some of us, we're told, you know, like if you feel sad, like you don't need to feel sad about that.
Yeah.
What are you sad about?
Just get over it.
Right. Like, oh, so that doesn't make me feel sad. Okay. So I should feel like this about it because that's okay.
What somebody told you to feel.
Yeah. And so even as an adult, I mean, I sit with my therapist every once in a while. I'm like, hey, this is how I feel about this thing. Can you either validate that or not?
Right.
Because I'm still questioning. Mm-hmm. And
we get squashed. We get squashed. Yeah. I think it in parts of our life, we get squashed down and then we think we might have a tool to get better. Mm-hmm. But then it's the power of what somebody says mm-hmm. to us. And it can just crash us right to the ground.
Yeah. Positive or negative.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Affirmations, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to go back to my therapist and say something about her. I can't remember what it was. She's just wonderful.
I think it speaks to the power of therapy within recovery mm-hmm. because we need to have a voice that gives us that separation from the messages that you got as a mm-hmm. child, mm-hmm. you got as an adult, you got as a mother, you got as as a partner, mm-hmm. we need to have that objective perspective. Mm-hmm. I reflected last week that I had the same thing. I had somebody who just like listened to me and let me talk about things that I didn't know could be talked about.
Yeah.
And they give us that freedom. So if anybody's struggling out there, we don't say you should do anything, but you could go out and get some help.
Oh, you surely could. Yeah. And I could have gotten therapy a little bit sooner in my life. In fact, I did try. Mm-hmm. I just didn't find a good connection.
Yep.
That was important to me. I didn't want to just talk to anybody because I had a lot of icky stuff, mm-hmm. right? Really icky stuff. So even when I was in AA and my sponsor, she was my sponsor. She's one of my best friends. She definitely doesn't know all this stuff. Like, you know, if we talk about doing those kinds of things with people that we don't know, we don't necessarily know if we can trust them. Even if we think we can, it's still really scary. At least in this space, you know, I know that there's some kind of security. This woman is bound by the law to not be repeating the things that I say to her.
Right.
And she's going to help me through
Safe.
It. And chances are she's probably heard similar things, maybe even worse, mm-hmm. you know. And every single time I tell her something that's awful or, you know, like I did a thing or I had a thought even, she's just like, oh, it's fine. You're human, mm-hmm. man. Well, and guess what? What can we do from there, right?
Well, and I think something that you said triggers something in mine, and that is you went to AA, I went to AA back mm-hmm. in the beginning, and we walk into those rooms, and we think we're the only person on the planet that's mm-hmm. been through this stuff.
Right.
We think, no, nobody here is going to know. Can I open up? You know,
to who?
It's like I'm struggling for some sort of words because you just don't know who can you trust, who's going to be there, who might blow your cover, what's going to happen. But that's because we feel like we're so incredibly unique and nobody has a story like ours. And I think that's where when you see your recovery, you can begin to share to the degree of comfort. And then somebody looks at you and kind of, does the puppy in the window like, mm-hmm. oh, I get that. Mm-hmm. And that's where that magic happens, where you, with your therapist, with my therapist, with a trusted person, when we can, I had mentioned last week, take off the cloak mm-hmm. and we can be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, is that a tough spot.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to take me a step back to that 12-year-old and kind of go back in that story, if you can. So you started and you had your first drunk, mm-hmm. your first, just give me a snapshot of who that little girl was. What brought that on? Because I think that might be important for people who are listening. Why would a child pick up a piece? You don't have to tell me the details. That's not my point, but mm-hmm. that's pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that escape like?
You know, I don't necessarily, the literal escape
mm-hmm.
was, you know, I don't necessarily know in the moment why I thought, you know, I needed to drink or whatever, but I knew that I had a lot of experience hanging out with, you know, kids that were older than me, mm-hmm. and there was partying around me, and there was, you know, bars, and, you know, drinking was just very normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anything about drinking because I was 12.
Right.
So me and my girlfriend, I want to say her name, but I won't. Actually, I will. Stephanie and Harriet. That was like one of the funniest nights of my life. It was awful and hilarious.
All at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, it's just like you, the next, I mean, I remember bits and pieces of it, mm-hmm. right? We drank blackberry brandy and it was delightfully awful. And I remember being so drunk, all I could do was just say how sorry I was over and over for like ever. And I remember them being like, you need to stop saying you're sorry. And so then I said, I apologize. Many times. And, you know, I guess we never had a conversation about that until, like, we were older, reflecting back on it. Harriet is Stephanie's mom, and she's just a hoot. I love the woman. She was really kind to me. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't scold me, but we mm-hmm. did have a conversation about it and how we shouldn't
do
be doing this. Yes. Yeah, but it's like, why would I have gone back? Mm-hmm. It was an awful experience, mm-hmm. you know? Looking back at it, it's hilarious, but it was awful in the moment.
Yeah.
I didn't get anything out of that.
No.
You know?
But what you wanted to do, there was something that took place from that birth part mm-hmm. and that story that you wanted to escape. And that's a lot of what we are dealing with, is that escape thing. And I don't think a lot of people think that when somebody is drinking or using drugs or using chemicals of whatever that is, that there's a part of them that's just trying to numb the pain, escape the pain, go beside the pain. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a way.
It's, can I tell you one thing that I learned during those 6 years that that I was trying to find recovery? I used to journal. I've liked writing and, you know, all sorts of writing my whole life. And so I had started journaling. I never went back to read my journals. I just never have mm-hmm. Until maybe about a year and a half into my recovery. And it was so funny to read, like, you know, Aaron's doing well. And then all of a sudden, like, there was a thing that happened with a specific human. Aaron's not doing as well.
Wow.
Aaron, you know.
Third person?
Goes back. No, just a second person. But
okay.
Then, you know, so Aaron's not doing well now. And so now she goes to the bottle. And then she gets away from that person. Mm. And then she does well. And then she brings person back. And then she. But I didn't recognize it. I mean, I did. I'm sure of it. I had to have recognized it. But I was so lost. And I thought that I really needed that human. Mm-hmm. Right? And I couldn't get out of that cycle. And so, yeah, being able to look back then and just be like, there is triggers. Mm-hmm. There are things that activate me because I didn't know what they were.
Right.
Right? It was everything as far as I knew. Mm-hmm. It was waking up in the morning. Whoops. Now I want to drink.
Right. Well, I think what you said is the important part is that is if we look back objectively, and I didn't journal, but I can cycle stories. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, can we cycle stories? Mm-hmm. But there was a cycle. There was a cycle of like, oh, okay, I'm not going to go out to the bars like I used to, but I'm going to sit at home and I'm going to be better. Mm-hmm. But then I get lonely, so then I have to go out. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a home consumer of alcohol. Mm-hmm. I was a bar girl. Mm-hmm. And I didn't dance on the bar top. What do you call it? The bar, the thing on the that bar. You get your drinks on. I didn't dance on the bar very often. I did a couple times. But, and I remember the last one. It's kind of fun. That was a bad one, though. Whew. Wow. If anybody's
just
out
came
there.
Flooding back.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, Aaron just saw it. If anybody's out there and you heard me just sort of like go, I just had this flood of all these memories of that one particular night and those adventures that took place. We were listening to the suburbs. Okay, suburbs. Anybody who's from this town knows the suburbs. So we were dancing out of the bar because we were listening to the suburbs. Anyway, but we have that cycle of I want to do better, but then I hurt a little bit more. And mm-hmm. so I've got to tame the hurt. And I know my friend alcohol is going to be mm-hmm. the one that helps sort of squash that pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know where I parked my car or mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, what I'm doing. And I wake up black from a blackout. But like you had said earlier, I just do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we come back, we have a couple of minutes left here, but I want to talk about just a little bit about how I actually had like a long period of, I don't want to call it, well, normal mm-hmm. life, right? There was a big chunk of time in my life where I was normal, and you just kind of brought it to my mind when you said something, because then I had a big thing happen mm-hmm. when I was 32, and that's when I remembered my friend alcohol took things away when I was younger.
Oh, wow.
Right? And so that's how that started. And I guess it was a big enough thing that I really wanted it to go away so badly that I just kept drinking and drinking
right.
until I no longer was consuming alcohol. And now alcohol is consuming me
wow.
and my life.
That's such an interesting thing to say, because it starts off sometimes that you're out enjoying the alcohol, and then all of a sudden the alcohol is enjoying you.
Mm-hmm.
It's all you can think about. There's no other thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is impossible for those who do not have a substance use disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are absolutely stymied by why would you go back and do that. And we, over the course of this show, these conversations, we'll try to unpack that as best we can. And for those of you who are like, I get it, but I don't get it,
mm-hmm.
and I understand it, but just want to try to give it some space. Want to try to give it a little bit of, okay. So when we come back, Erin's going to have another reflection. I can hardly wait.
Yay.
Thank you. Redefining recovery. Welcome back to Redefining Recovery, a Recovery Revolution with Kattie Frank and Erin Fitzgerald.
Yellow.
Yellow. How you doing there? So we left and Erin had one of those moments where the light bulb went off on something. And this is the beauty of doing a show like this, where when we talk about and we listen to one another, we can do reflections. So tell me what was on your mind, Erin, when we left.
Before. Yeah, it's so funny because every time we have a conversation, I'm like, oh, that's a thing. That's yes, we have to talk about that. I need to make a note. So I was just, reflecting on, when I was younger, I used until I was 18 pretty heavily. From the age of 14, 15 mm-hmm. to 18, I would say every day I was using either alcohol or mostly cannabis, actually.
Mm.
But really, I grew up in a small town, and anything that came through that town, and if I could get my hands on it, I would use it.
Nice.
I was bored, and nobody was paying attention to me, so
whatever. Why not?
I did what I did. And then I moved down to the big city. I didn't drink anymore because I wasn't 21, and I didn't care because I had cannabis. And then I got married and had a child. So by the age of 20, I was basically not using substance anymore, right? Mm. Just for special occasions. But generally when I was drinking, it was to get drunk because I didn't really know that there was other ways of drinking.
Where was the off switch?
Right? Yeah. Mm. And there was no off switch. But so then, say a dozen years or so go by, and then I had another really big thing happen in my life. And it was almost as if I lost a child. Ooh. And the pain that I felt was just unbearable because I could still see the child.
Mm.
He wasn't actually gone. I just wasn't able to have him in my life anymore. And the story behind that is a little complicated, but he's still a part of my life and we still love each other very much.
Mm.
So that really hurt. And in that moment, I remembered what alcohol had done for me before.
Oof.
Well, what substance? I didn't know where to find weed. Let's be honest.
Gotta hunt it down
in
the city.
Yeah, well, I don't know anybody. And so that's when my drinking started. And I guess by the time I recognized that I had a problem, I mean, of course I knew I had a problem. I wasn't going to admit it. And nobody had said anything to me or questioned
it.
Because that's a difficult thing to do.
Oh, my gosh, right? Yes.
So having people say, like, hey, man, I care about you. You look like you're struggling. That didn't happen for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it did and I blew it off.
Sure.
I mean, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things I don't remember.
It's a lot I don't remember right. during a period of my life.
Right. So, we're going to start talking about peer services next week. And that's really why we got here or why MRC started, right? And that's why I got to know Minnesota Recovery Connection is because I wanted to know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And had I had a peer recovery specialist in my life, would my life have been different? I'm guessing yes, because I would have known what I did not know. Absolutely. And that was like everything, mm-hmm. right? And so there's another another piece to your training that I really like, and that's who you are, because that's something that's so important that nobody ever took the time to ask me or get to know who Aaron is, mm. right? In order to figure out what Aaron needs.
Are you talking about the stick person we
yeah.
have in the class?
Yeah.
I'll just give a quick description of that. So I have this stick person, and this was actually developed by a very good friend of mine in one of the trainings that we did with the Native American community several years ago. And it's a stick person. And what she developed was, you know, here are all these different descriptors of what is our gender, what is our socioeconomic, what is our education, what is our religion, what are all these things. But then it evolved, and what I did, and that is, what do I need to know about this stick person that will help me understand you? What is it that I need to know? And by the end of the class, 4 or 5 classes ago, I just kept holding up this piece of paper with a stick person. I kept pointing like, what do I need to know? What do I need to know about you, Aaron, mm-hmm. or me, Caddy, mm-hmm. that will help me understand where you are?
Yeah, and what you need. Yeah. And so the other part of that is, you know, I felt like not only were people not seeing who I was, but mm-hmm. when I was saying things to certain people, I wasn't being heard, right? And I'm going to not bash on, but a little tiny bit, because we're going to have a conversation about my medical history, oh. because I feel like in all those times that I was seen in the ER and by my physicians and anybody else, there was this big gold shining star that said, alcoholic.
Yeah.
And so when I had questions about my health, they were pushed to the side because Aaron was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to answer these questions today. First, you need to quit drinking. And lo and behold, just a few months ago, I learned some life-changing information. Uh-huh. And honestly, it's kind of devastating
yeah.
because it's changed my life completely, right? So not only were people not asking the questions, but they weren't listening when I had something true to say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so looking at people like just persons instead of an
diagnosis.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, you are not your alcoholism.
Well, you're not your label. We get labeled.
Absolutely.
Labeled and stigmatized.
Right.
And I think that's what you're saying. You were just that.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't Aaron, the human, the female who's in pain.
Mm-hmm.
You were put in that silo. I'm not going to be heard.
And so that's when recovery became recovery for me.
Ooh.
From your class 2.5 years ago, when I learned that I wasn't sober, I wasn't an alcoholic, I was a woman in long-term recovery. So mm-hmm. thank you for that. And we are going to talk so much more about that next week. Yeah, there's just so much. Yee! Before we end the show, I want anybody who is listening to please check us out at minnesotarecovery.org. We'll have our podcast there as well as on our Facebook page, minnesotarecovery.org, I believe, as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's see, we also have a YouTube channel, and that is called Redefining Recovery, a Recovery Revolution. Please look us up and share us. And if you have questions or comments, please send us an email to podcast@minnesotarecovery.org. We would love to hear from you. We will do a live show eventually. We're just getting our feet wet here so that we can feel comfortable. And I don't know, Caddy. I'm having a great time.
So am I. So remember, this is a show that is called Redefining Recovery, Redefining Recovery, a Recovery Revolution. And Minnesota Recovery Connection is truly this place where recovery and peer-to-peer services started in this state. And I'm so proud to represent our organization. I am so excited to be here and have these real conversations. So, Aaron, have a lovely day.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys.